Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Welcome to Webcology here on WMR.fm. It's the 15th of May, 2025. This is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hello, everybody.
This has been a particularly busy week in tech. It's been a very Googlicious week. We have a lot of Googly stories. You know, it's funny. Last week, we titled the episode, Google's Getting Its Ads Handed to Them. I think this week, we're going to be talking about a lot of the reasons why. We're going to be rehashing them. Before we jump in, I want to extend a great deal of love, respect, and thanks to our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Audience Key is actually going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, outlining a new addition, a new expansion of the product. Actually, I really can't wait to talk to Tom. I have a whole bunch of content questions for Tom coming up. And I saw a really weird thing in Reddit the other day. People asking in the SEO, Reddit SEO group, is Wix a bad thing for SEO? And the responses were kind of amazing. People, it seems that in this paradigm, at any rate, SEOs have grown to start using and trust Wix. And I think that could be attributed to the, you know, incredible work they've done over the last couple of years to improve their platform.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that's a lot to do with Morty overseeing. He did a lot to repair the issues between SEOs and Wix. So people who are new to SEO probably don't remember the Wix SEO challenges, and they're a bit hostile towards us, and that's all changed. And they've gone a long way to make sure that they're following SEO best practices. And they even have an accessibility feature in there now, which will outline any accessibility issues and help you fix them immediately. So, you know, they've come a long, long way.
I think it's wonderful that you mentioned Morty. And anyone out there in their career, if you're, you know, doubting yourself or feeling like you, like one person can't have an impact on how the industry evolves, Check out Morty. This guy has had enormous impact on Wix, and also on just the whole concept of branding, brand search, and the importance of it. So yeah, yes. Hat tip to him.
And hat tip to him. He has an agency now. He's left Wix in the recent past, and he is working with people on their brand building, brand recognition across platforms and AI. So he's definitely someone you want to check out, and we will have on the show again in the future. So
yeah, he's a fun guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Okay, if you are in certain parts of Europe, specifically Turkey, Sweden, and the Netherlands, you're about to experience AI overviews. Google is on the is testing, quote unquote, testing AI overview in parts of Europe. Expanding to more EU regions as it rolls out ahead of Google I/O, which is happening next week. Brace for impact, folks.
Oh wow, it's next week.
Well, yeah, I mean, can you take yourself back, Christine, like a year ago to you know, this is just, maybe it was a year, what 18 months ago that AI overview started really impacting search results in North America.
Yeah, it's a year, feels like 10 right now.
But
yeah.
Well, do you remember the days before that? Did you think about what was going to happen? Did you have a clue the actual impact that it would have?
Yeah, I thought so, but I was in the Google Labs experiment. So, in the Google Labs experiment, they didn't have a little crunchy top, they expanded anywhere from 15 to 3,200 pixels on open of the search. So at least they pulled back from that. So yes, we were very nervous about that. We were writing about it at the time because we were in the test group. So.
As it turns out, AI overviews is the equivalent of zero-click results on steroids.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Now, that's not to say it doesn't drive traffic. It does, just not a lot. A
Well,
lot less, in fact.
it depends. I've seen research from 8% to 15%. I think someone came out with a very large number last week. I haven't looked at their study, and it would be out of the norm for the other studies that have been reporting. So the average is 8 to 15% loss if there's an AI overview, but there are more and more AI overviews.
And for what I don't mean to dispute your numbers in any way, just the concept that there is currently a norm, because everything is up in flux, right? Everything is
Well,
being tested
yeah,
and
no, it always changes. That's why I said 8 to 15% on average, because it depends on what they're testing and how it changes. And sometimes it's a lot and sometimes it's less. And they're just still testing all of it. So we don't really know the damage at this time. But the pictures are sometimes very large and sometimes a lot smaller. So don't react to every number you see about how much traffic it's stealing, but it is stealing traffic for sure.
well, again, folks in Turkey, Sweden, and the Netherlands will be really interested in hearing your experiences with AI Overview, and how it changes your practice, if it changes your practice at all. And yeah, it's coming. It's probably on screen right now, in fact. Speaking of stuff that's on screen right now, ChatGPT 4.1 has been merged into just ChatGPT. OpenAI has made its newest version 4.1 available across all paid, I'm sorry, paid ChatGPT account tiers. So Pro, Plus, Pro, or Team users.
Yes, this is the one, and this is the one that we've been testing at higher levels for a little while. But one thing people should know about 4.1, it does hallucinate more. So be more vigilant in checking your information and facts that comes out of that version.
Okay, so, yeah, so I don't even know how to comment on AI stories anymore. I'm really worried about the loss of skills that I see coming in future generations. That actually almost terrifies me. How people who use GPS frequently lose the ability to spatially reckon themselves or figure out how far distances are or where things are, remembering
It's that,
maps.
yeah, it's actually even more severe as you get older. It increases and accelerates dementia if you move solely to GPS. For people of the generation that build mind maps of it, obviously that wouldn't be people who are much younger now, but the older generation, they're actually sending them out on orienteering classes to help rebuild that part of their brain, which they stopped using when they used GPS. So yeah, there are
Well,
cognitive implications for this. So, and we know that from actual medical research, not us, you and me talking. So.
for science fiction writers, a character from 2023, 2024 goes forward in time 40 years and doesn't have a clue how to do anything. People can't read handwriting anymore either. Okay. Google, actually, Google is launching free generative AI certification. They're going to have a free certification training course focusing, of course, on their tools and on Gemini. The course is free. The certification exam costs 99 American, $100 American. But again, Google will give you free training materials the whole way through. And if you spend your $100, you get a nice bug to put on your website. I'm a certified generative AI leader. What do you
Yeah,
think?
yes. Well, as long as people are clear, this is for Google Cloud Skills. But if you don't know much about generative AI, you could take it and learn the basics. That is part of the course. The first part of it is fundamentals of generative AI. It's 30% of the class. So it'd be worth it for people to maybe take it to understand better how it works, because a lot of people in the industry, I think, are a little unclear on how that is. And then just in general, regular people who are listening too, so everyday people. But it is a good treat. It's free. So, if you have the time to take it and you're interested in AI, might as well,
I have never in my life seen a a time when getting certified training. You don't necessarily need the certificate, although, trust me, in our business, it doesn't hurt to have. In fact, it helps a lot. I've never seen it be a waste of time. Even if it's a little bit out of your field, like I've done a lot of PPC training through Google. I do not do PPC. I don't touch that world, but I'm really glad I've done some of that training.
Sure. Yes, always always helps to learn about the other fields that touch yours.
Okay, so it's out, the generative AI leader certification program for non-technical professionals is out there. Find it. By the way, again, this isn't about ChatGPT. It's not about Copilot. It's not about non-googly tools. This is the Googleverse.
And how to use it with Google Cloud. That's the other part of it. Yeah.
Okay, so we're jumping over to, speaking of the Googleverse. The Googleverse is a more of a, well, it's Alphabet. Everything Alphabet owns and has connected together, but it's in jeopardy. There are three separate antitrust cases out there, one in the UK, two in the United States. Oh, I'm sorry, one in the EU, two in the United States. There's a number of class actions in the UK. And the antitrust cases, especially the two in the US, are in, but they've been decided in all cases, Google is a monopoly and acting as one. And we're at the remedy phase, which can be frightening for a company like Google because, I mean, how many times can you break up a very loudly ringing bell? And Google is about to get baby belled. At least that appears to be what the judges are deciding. So that's the foundation for the next couple of stories. In the coming year, we're going to learn what is going to happen with Google. How the US Department of Justice and the US court system will decide Google's fate. But how would you feel if you had worked in a place for, like, say, 20 years, developed all this institutional knowledge, developed a whole bunch of systems, and then seen your knowledge, your systems, your ideas, and even your own emails used as testimony in court. But the prosecutors and the state didn't get the context of your communications right. How do you think you'd feel if, given the implications that could have? There's this guy, Ray Moulton. He was a Google search engineer, worked in the search ranking as now on Google's algorithms for like almost 20 years, 18 years. And he went on Twixter, on X, to just basically rant that a whole bunch of the stuff in the lawsuits aren't true or are at least a little bit enough off base that the interpretation will affect the case and they don't really know what they're talking about. That would drive you crazy, eh?
Yeah, I might go to Twitter and talk about it a lot, which he did.
Well, like Ray Moulton's doing. So what's he
Yeah.
saying? What's he getting at?
Well, a couple of the items he internally believed were being handled one way, when we know from the DOJ documents from before that they were not. So, like search quality, he was telling somebody that there's no way they decrease search quality, but there are emails where Sundar did want to decrease search quality because it made more money for ads, basically. So there's things that internally and then you didn't know that your big old boss was doing something different. But a lot of it's just basic, more contextual, like, hey, it says this, but this isn't really what this means. So it's really worth the read. We can't cover it all here because it's just a lot and it's very long. But it comes from the current DOJ testimony, which we're going to cover a little bit more for some insights into Google's algorithms. But I would definitely go read it. Barry
Well, I
Schwartz
mean,
has an article about an 18-year Google search engineer rants. You can just type that in.
on DOJ's antitrust case. Yeah, so Christine, I mean, you just hit a nail on the head a second ago when you said we're going to be talking about some of the stuff coming out of the DOJ cases as they affect Google's algorithms. A lot of the stuff we're going to be talking about is SEOs taking stuff and running with it, even though they're not entirely
Yeah.
positive of the foundation or context. And I think SEOs can actually really relate to what Ray Moulton's talking about because we do the same damn thing that the prosecution and the DOJ is doing. And perhaps the same thing that Google is, you know, Google may well be obfuscating fact on purpose. I mean, I wonder. I wonder, do you think Google might do that, Christine? Jeez. But,
Generally, yes, not in a court case, though. I don't think that they do that in court cases. Some people do, but there are legal issues with that, and they're already in a lot of legal trouble. So I think these are the legitimate documents with a lot of blackout, a lot redacted.
yeah. So anyway, so Ray Moulton's out there. Look him up. Look up his writing. It's an interesting read. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's wrong. And maybe Moulton's got some of this out of context too. Very frequently, the right side of the office hasn't a clue what the left side of the office is doing at Google. Like frequently, they don't communicate. Okay, but as Christine said, out of these documents, out of this testimony, comes a treasure trove of information that we would otherwise never, ever, ever, ever get about how Google operates. And one of the remedies that's being suggested is taking Chrome away from Google, making Google or Alphabet divest itself of Chrome and make it a standalone company. What that means, how that works, how the machines all mesh together, none of us actually know, but this is what they're talking about. And so, this is what's being talked about in court, and we learn that Chrome helps the clicks, how to say this, tracking clicks through Chrome helps Google adjust position bias when it comes to deciding the heat, popularity, responsive users to a search engine results page. So
But
clicks
yeah.
do tangentially affect rankings, but not, again, not directly.
Yeah, so some of the people are running with the idea that Google said they don't use clicks, they do use clicks. Well, Google's never said don't use clicks at all. Matt Cutts said that they do look at pogo sticking, not as a single result. Pogo sticking is when you go to a page and you come out and find another page that's better, because that means that page is not satisfying the search. They don't do it on one, but over thousands and thousands of clicks. If that one's never getting clicked, it may drop out of the result. These are stored in NavBoost. NavBoost was the original documentation. That's not this documentation. There's 40 pages on how NavBoost works and how it's developed. And NavBoost basically takes clicks and engagement, popularity, and when you do a search for something, all these documents come back at once. And Google uses NavBoost to help cull those documents down to a reasonable level to create a search result. Right. And so those search results don't only include, let's be clear, don't only include NavBoost documents, because otherwise nobody who had no clicks and engagement would be able to be in the top 10. And there are reasons other people might be in there. But they use that, they collect it for 18 months when they started, now 13 months. And they use that in clicks and engagement to help cull the documents down because those documents were popular documents. So they might be really good for answering the query. And that's where also they use things like Chrome. And these are part of three fundamental signals. This is also in the DOJ docs. Anchors, the source page pointing to the target page. Body, terms in the document. These are their definitions. Clicks, historically how long a user stayed at a particular linked page before bouncing back to the SERP. That is pogo sticking. That is not clicking the document itself by itself. Pogo sticking is different. Bounce, that's not bounce rate. Bounce rate is also different. Like Matt Cutts used to say, bounce rate can be totally noisy signal because you might want to go check the weather or a movie time. Back then, those were not in the SERPs by themselves. And you bounce right back out because you got your information as soon as you got into the page. So bounce is not what they're talking about. It's a noisy signal, doesn't help them clarify. And that's what these are meant to do. But if you go to a page and you bounce back and find another page in the SERP and bounce back and you find another page in the SERP and that one satisfies your query, and the other two probably weren't for some reason. And over time, after they collect lots of information, you might not appear in that NavBoost culling, or you may appear lower in the rankings for that result.
There
So
you
that's
go.
how that works. Yeah. And then
Interestingly,
there's
now
a
that you
lot, by the
mentioned
way.
Nav. Oh,
Go
sorry.
ahead. Go ahead. Go
Well, now
ahead.
that you
Go ahead.
mentioned NavBoost, interestingly, people thought NavBoost was all about machine learning, and it's just a very elaborate and apparently massive database.
Yeah, they clarify that they do not have machine learning working with NavBoost, which is kind of amazing. But originally, Matt Cutts said he never put machine learning into the core algorithms because if it broke, it could not fix it. So it does make sense that most of this stuff, as they revealed in this document, now we don't know when the document was written because I didn't get a link to the full thing. I'm looking for it, but But they do use LLMs and RankBrain and DeepRank, so we know at least it's post 2019. So the other DOJ docs were 2018 and earlier. So it's very interesting. Also, topicality is a very big thing. I would read the document for topicality because of the key components of topicality or a base score. This is straight from the DOJ doc. Which is Google's determination of how document is relevant to the query.
Which makes sense. Context, 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 context makes sense. Google's been saying this for how long?
Forever. So some people see these and they misinterpret and then they run with it. And it's like, these are not new. NavBoost in the 2018 first DOJ testimony docs, that was new. And there's so much information there. And a lot of people only publish the first mention of it. There's actually a second 40-page doc about NavBoost. So people want to make sure to read both, not just the one that most people link to. But yeah, it's really interesting. So they call these handcrafting of signals. Almost every signal, aside from RankBrain and DeepRank, which are LLM based, are handcrafted and thus able to be analyzed and adjusted by engineers. So, to develop and use these signals, engineers look at data and take a sigmoid or other function and figure out the threshold to use. Threshold is a really important thing right now because we're going to talk about, and I'm sure in a minute, quality raters. So, the handcrafting means that Google takes all these sigmoids and figures out of the threshold, out the thresholds. I mean, sorry, sigmoids and figures out the thresholds. In the extreme, handcrafting means that Google looks at the relevant data and picks the midpoint manually. For the majority of signals, Google takes the relevant data, web page content, structure, user clicks, and labeled data from human raters, and then performs a regression. Can we go into rater data real quick?
Really quick, really,
Okay,
really
so
quick.
really quick, yeah. So there's a second doc mentioned in a lot of the posts about this that says quality raters are used to label. And everyone who doesn't know the quality raters, how they work, assume that meant that Google is like automatically using that to like, oh, they affect thresholds, automatically using that to rank documents. But in the process of quality raters are just QA. They just test whether the test went a certain way. They don't know whether they were testing something good or bad. That goes back to the engineers. The engineers may do thousands of tests, but
The
as
quality
the
raters, by the way, haven't a clue the result of their work. They don't know.
Exactly. And they label things. And those labels, as we know here, as it says right here, label data from human raters are part of what the Google engineers take to develop their algorithms and they perform a regression on that. So the quality raters do their work and they may have a thousand tests for the same thing. The quality raters don't know what's being tested. And then the engineers go, great, we got it. It's awesome. This is perfect algorithm. But then it has to go through review by other engineers, other departments. And finally, it is not allowed to be put in until it goes through legal. And that is because they are a big corporation. So we know from some story we're going to cover later, it had a really bad thing that it was saying to everybody like this week. And you can't chance that with a $1 trillion company and your stock value. So it has to go through legal. So nobody, it doesn't go straight into machine learning. It doesn't go straight anywhere. It goes through a lot of review before it's allowed to be added.
And then it
From
goes
the
in front of the most important raters of all, the general public. And
yes, yeah.
this is the ones that Google actually doesn't tend to listen to at all. So, yeah. Okay, we got so much to go through,
Yeah, we got to
and
move. Yeah, we got to
hard
move.
stop in about 45 minutes. So,
Yeah,
this
so
one is
go find
terrifying.
wait, just real quick, go find out. I just want to give people a
Yeah,
chance to look it
go.
up. Go to Search Engine Roundtable. Google NavBoost is not a machine learning system, and more DOJ leaks from Barry Schwartz. It was published on May 13th.
By the way, big shout out to some fellow named Gangan Gautra, a SEO who did some heavy sleuthing to help put all of this together. Also, Brett
Yes.
Tapke from a Webmaster World, his poking about uncovered a whole bunch of information from extracted from the evidence. So, shout out to both Brett Tapke and Gangan Gautra. Thanks a lot for your service, guys. This one's really scary. So Grok was thought to be the most how to say this?
Honest?
Honest? Yeah, honest of the chatbot LLM machine learning or AI chatbot type public AIs. This is a review you might remember. Grok was heavily has been highly critical of its creator, Elon Musk, or its founder, Elon Musk, an owner, calling him the largest source of misinformation on the other platform he owns, Twixter X. So, Grok has, there was the Turing test where you could see if a, you could figure out if it was a machine you were talking to or a human. Well, I'm going to call this the Goring test, not the Turing test, the Goring test.
Goring test.
Is your chatbot a Nazi or not? Has it gone far right, or is it crossed over from, moderately right wing to outright Nazi? Well, Grok seems to have, at least on the concept of white genocide. Because Grok has been bringing up the concept of white genocide really like a drunk uncle at Thanksgiving, totally unbidened and unasked and out of context and
Yes.
absolutely racist and incorrect. I'm not going to go into what the concept of white genocide is. It has a lot to do with the
It's just a far
Boer
right
South
conspiracy
Africans
to, yeah.
that were imported to
Yeah.
the United States by the Trump administration last week. I'm again not going to go into the conspiracy theory around them, or the racism or lunacy behind it. But Grok will talk about it a lot. So
Everywhere.
obviously, someone's been training Grok to accept the theory of white, or the conspiracy theory of white genocide, as accepted fact.
Well, sometimes it wasn't always positive for that. Sometimes it was the opposite. But it would say it was a conspiracy theory, and this is ridiculous. But according to Musk, his response, had we recorded yesterday, we wouldn't have this yet, but we do have it now. It said that it was an unauthorized update to his bot, unauthorized modification. I think it sounds like probably data poisoning, which is when you get information in, but somebody did do some programming, obviously, as well. So they're able to
So,
get new instructions into the bot, basically.
okay, so
And
somebody
it.
showed up at Grok headquarters with a data stick and shoved it into the machine, and lo and behold, and boom, Grok was changed. We snuck it in the dead of night.
Well, they are rumoring that it's a rogue employee, which would make the most sense because that would be a hard thing to easily, hack into. You could, if you're really good. There are really good hackers that could do that. But it says a rogue, he's right now blaming a rogue employee, but who knows, because Musk isn't necessarily truthful. But anyway, it was kind of funny because like someone would ask about HBO and then they'd be like, so let me tell you why white genocide is a conspiracy theory. It's like on everything that some of these people were, prompting. But anyway, right now we don't know. But this is why regulations are important, to make sure that these things are tested and the algorithms are more transparent. So anyway, but it is, I believe it is fixed now. They're saying it's a rogue employee, definitely an unauthorized change to how the bot works. And you should not be seeing any more white genocide comments in Twitter
So
or stuff.
Grok is actually working this out. Grok is taking this seriously and trying to
No,
eliminate it from.
the company is.
Well, okay.
I had a friend who's an AI security for large language models at a large corporation, very, very large, and they do their work on what gets outputted, not inputted. So you may still ask for it, but it'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't heard about this, because they'll start filtering out the things that could cause a response. So I'm sure that's
Interesting.
what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving forward, this one's interesting. Scientists have found a way to use ChatGPT and other AI chatbots to carry encrypted messages invisible to cybersecurity systems. Put them in the middle of a regular communication, a regular tweet, a regular essay, or even an image. I remember back in the day when micropixels were being hidden
Yeah.
in images.
I had a
So
website that had one put on that site. I found it. Found a
this
live
is a
one.
very, very similar sort of thing. The scary thing is using this method, these scientists believe they may have found a way to have iron tight encryption.
Yeah, it's exciting as the co-author Renick might be saying that wrong, of course. He was at University of Oslo. He said the research is very exciting, but like every technical framework, the ethics come into picture about the misuse of the system, which we need to check whether the framework can be applied. So this could be applied for very bad things too. Secret, plans for nefarious actions. But it is interesting that they found a way possibly to protect messaging in that method. So
Well, very, very, very insanely strong encryption is integral to the operation of the internet. From everything from regular communications we have via our emails to our freaking banking and credit card information. So encryption is important, but ironclad 100%, you cannot break an encryption is in some ways terrifying because there's some terrifying actors out there, really, 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 really awful people who have really, really, really awful plans. And in the olden days, they all had to get together somewhere and whisper to each other in a field.
exactly, or send
Now
books
they
with
can just send stuff
messages.
via like a Twitch conversation.
So just so people know, this is normal end-to-end encryption technology with an LLM layer with cryptography layered in be over and under, basically sandwiching them the real message. So that is where the LLM comes into.
So, do you ever use voice recognition as a means of security, a means of like accessing an account or getting as a replacement for a password?
Sometimes they ask you to do that. I won't say which because we do a live show and someone could use my voice. But they do use it. I try not to, but I can tell you it's really narrow. Because if I have a cold or something, it's like we do not recognize your voice, and I'm like, okay, I'll just type things in. So.
Malicious actors are using text message and AI-generated voice messages to impersonate senior U.S. officials in
Yeah.
schemes to gain access to their federal or state official accounts. If they can do that to senior U.S. officials, as Christine said, they can get you to say yes or no in a spam telephone call conversation and do it to you.
Yeah, they
So.
only need 3 seconds of your voice to make a facsimile of your voice. So be aware of that. That's why I never answer a number I do not know.
Now, we were talking about a loss of skills earlier in the program. My fear that people absolutely reliant on AI to do simple things like write letters for them or plan itineraries or whatever are going to lose the human level skills to figure that out themselves. Well, it seems to be it apparently terrorists, Houthi rebels, Hezbollah, Hamas, terrorist or non-state actors from Syria, Kuwait, Iran. They're using the paid version of X to generate pro or of I'm sorry, the paid they're paying X to generate propaganda via Grok. Now I'm not if these people lose their propaganda writing skill sets, I don't think that it's a terrible loss to the world.
No.
But I think the folks at Grok might want to take a look at this.
Yeah, and this is just people paying for premium services, which when Musk originally said he was going to implement it to make it real people, we were like, well, nation states have money, and a lot of these terrorist groups have a lot of money. But the Tech Transparency Project is the one that flagged this, and they have flagged accounts likely linked to U.S. sanctioned terrorists. And some of them even bear an ID verified badge. So you have to be really careful. You don't always know who you're talking to. But yeah, apparently they haven't given money to Grok. And this is an Ars Technica report. And so far, Ars Technica had not received a response from X Twixter about this. But the TTP is a very well-known established group with a lot of credibility. So I believe they're probably finding what they say they're finding.
Okay. So as it turns out,
This is a
if
good
you,
story.
yeah, it turns out if you want to fire your human workers and replace them with AI? It's a risky strategy. It may or may not work out. As a company named Klarna learned in the last year, it nixed 700 jobs, 700 representatives doing customer service work, and tried to replace them with AI. As it turned out, AI could grind through a whole bunch of cases, but it couldn't do it with a sense of understanding or empathy or even effective problem solving. It couldn't step outside of its
It's
prescribed
training.
boxes to find ways to help people's problems, solve people's problems. And it really, really shitified the service Klarna was offering its clients.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Klarna is a pay-as-you-go service, but you get your, like, if I go to a clothing site, it'll say, do you want to pay four payments with Klarna? You get your product right away, so it's not layaway, but you pay it through Klarna. They have to approve you, that kind of thing. So last year, the CEO bragged about how they could get rid of all their employees. Like it was a big, like, we can do this. We don't need the people, basically. But he couldn't. And so now he changed his statement to, the key takeaway is that AI should augment human agents, not replace them, he said in an email. Automate the routine to drive efficiency, but always ensure customers have a clear, easy path to a human, especially when emotions or complexity come into play. I'd like to say that Zappos built their entire brand on this idea of quality customer service. And internally, someone got an award for being on the phone 23 hours with somebody in another country. So, yeah, being able to be human with your people is vastly important because the big thing about Zappos is they never did sales and they didn't offer anything at a discount, but they've made a $2 billion brand off of customer service. And I think as we go forward and more people add these AI replacements, the people that do real human customer service are the ones that'll probably win the game and the loyalty from the customers.
Well, the people who do that customer service are actually going to probably be unemployed, but their bosses, when the rest of the world figures it out, the next generation of customer service workers are going to have it okay.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm not talking about the workers. I'm saying the brands that'll win are the
Yeah.
ones that use real humans. Yeah.
Okay, so jumping over to some real story about fake news. People who tend to fall for fake news stories are also people who have symptoms of something called problematic social media use. It's hard to, okay. I'm of a generation that grew up before, actually, I grew up before the internet. I'm literally that old. That's it. And I don't mean to out you, but Christine, but I mean, I'm going to. Christine is also of an age that grew up before the internet, but
Well,
in our
okay.
20s, the internet became of age, of our into our adulthood. The internet was being popularized, invented, and commercialized, and brought out of the military and into the public realm. So we saw both worlds. We saw a world without Facebook, without Twitter, with a heck, we saw a world where MySpace didn't even exist. Yeah, that old. Today's younger people, millennials, Gen Z, they have grown up in a world where there's always a device in your hand, where there's always information available, where there's always entertainment available, and when you get that incredible, great dopamine hit every couple of seconds because somebody liked your work, or you've seen a puppy, or whatever it is that gets you that wonderful dopamine feeling. And that's addictive. And that can cause problematic social media use. The way you think about things changes, your attention span shrinks. Just people are a little bit different, and some people just can't get away from the environment. Those people are more likely to fall for, believe in, and wrap their lives around the narratives of fake news stories.
Which sure makes sense because a lot of times fake news stories are written in a way to elicit the dopamine hit. Although they are showing that Gen Z tends to use less social than prior generations. They're much more narrow in their focus. They use like one or two apps and not a whole bunch of them. But they are finding that they think this is not in the DSM yet, which is the official guide for psychological challenges, but they do think it's going to fall under like addiction study, addiction science, and they do say that that not everybody obviously is going to have this issue, but that when you do have this issue, it's similar to having an addiction issue. And so they're working towards getting that added to the DSM as an official problem. But you're right, they fall for fake news more probably because it elicits more of a response. The title that says, like, no, you know what? I can't even do it because I can't even think of one right now that wouldn't be political. So,
Anti-vax.
yeah. They'll say things. Someone sent me a video the other day who's very propensity has a high propensity for fake news, and in the background was do 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 do. Do 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 do, and some of the information was correct. It was about toxoplasmosis in humans, which is the cat. Yeah, it's a cat,
Cat scat
thing.
fever.
Yeah, and if a mouse gets infected by toxoplasmosis, they'll be friendly to cats, right? So it helps cats in the wild, but humans can get it. 2 billion in the world have it. Some people have some effects. Some people have some severe effects, just like with any kind of virus, but not tons of people. And
Buy
but
the
it was
tasty cat food.
exactly, but the video made it sound like do 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 do. You get this and you just change your personality and your DNA and everything. So beware of cats. That's the thing that gets the dopamine hit.
I got to tell you, Christine, I don't know if this is true or not, but I do know that my faithful friend and companion, Hypertext, who passed away 7 years ago when she was living at the house, we had mice. Now she's not here. We don't got mice. You tell me. You tell
Maybe
me, huh?
friendly mice from toxoplasmosis.
I think she was opening the door at night and letting them in so she could chase them later. She was a very smart
Probably.
cat that way.
And the mice are like, oh, cool, you're a cat. I like you. I shouldn't, but I do because I have
You,
toxoplasmosis.
your poo smells good. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one's hard to get through. I want to move away from the social media story and get back into Bing. Search APIs are going to retire August 11th, 2025.
Yeah, it
There's
wasn't
new
clear
deploy.
what. Go ahead.
No, new deployments are not available. Existing resources are going to be disabled. This just confuses me. What are they doing?
There is a referral to some products that people could move to, but it didn't. I couldn't find a good article on what the product really has in it, so I don't think it's fully released.
Well,
So stay
Azure
tuned.
AI, Azure is a Microsoft product. Azure AI agents are going to take over for Bing's APIs? That just seems
Yeah,
wrong.
it does. It does seem wrong,
Huh.
and but they didn't have much detail, so I didn't know what they really meant because agents is a broad category. So I don't know how that replaces your API. I just struggle with all this reliance on large language models, given that they becoming more hallucinatory, meaning more misinformation than and when they started. So I don't know if it's an odd play, but we'll find out when we get more details.
If you've built a search product or search tool that relies on Bing APIs, you might want to talk to your friendly folks over at Microsoft and
Yeah.
get some advice from them.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so Google had a Reddit problem. Specifically, Google AI Overviews had a Reddit problem. Reddit was, you remember in the early days of AI Overviews when it was telling people to use paste to keep the toppings on pizza or to, I
Yes,
think, use stick
drink your
pins
urine.
to drink your own urine for health benefits, etc.
Yeah.
Google's really taking that seriously and really, really, really working to limit the number of public hallucinations or public mistakes their systems make. They haven't got them totally, but a lot of that stuff came from Reddit. Like, Reddit's a free for all. Anybody can put anything up there. I can be a oncologist if I want to over at Reddit. Now, other Reddit users might call me on it, and many of them have a great deal of knowledge, and they try to keep the information system, relatively honest. But let's face it, it's Reddit. It's like the Wild West in there.
It's just opinions, yeah.
So Google was using Reddit data to train on, because it's real people doing real writing in real people voices. often talking about issues that are really important to the people who are talking about it, who happen to be us collectively. So it's important to us collectively. So this is a great space for Google to train on. Yes, maybe.
Really?
It cost Reddit a lot of money. It cost them a lot of money. And it would be so much more effective for Google if they just developed their own space. So that's what they're going to do. They're introducing Google Discussions, which is going to
Yes.
be Google's answer to Reddit.
Not going to be. I already have it on my phone.
Okay,
Let me tell
which is
you.
presently Google's answer to Reddit. But again,
Correct.
I don't even take that
Yeah.
sentence seriously, Christine, because
I
how
can't
can you
either.
really, like, Reddit is Reddit. Reddit's massive. Reddit is the front page of the internet.
Yeah, also, like Reddit is broken down into subreddits based on topics, based on categories, based on ideas, based on it's all clustered. So if they're learning on it, it's like the machine learning knows this is all, when it figures it out. It's all about, Big Bird. I'm
Yeah.
trying to think something totally
Hashtag
non-controversial.
superstructure.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's not going to have that same rhyme or rhythm to it. And like discussions, like as presented, like discussions beta. Here's some discussion on something related to you. They don't tell you what it is. Something related to what you entered. And then there might be 229 more comments. I am not touching that. I don't care. But I was looking this morning. I have vertigo issues the last 2.5 weeks, right? I went to the store to get my Dramamine less drowsy because I take the regular one. I'll be out for the day and I cannot sleep all day. They didn't have it. They had Bonanine. I didn't know if it works the same. And then today I was like, it made me tired yesterday. So can I take half a pill? And I said, can I cut a Dramamine pill in half? I got no answers related to it in the blue links. They all talk about everything but Dramamine, because it matters what pill it is and how you're taking it. And then I got discussions, and they got people also ask, and then I got other search results. And it's like by the time I was done, I was convinced I'm just moving to Bing except for work stuff. Because it's like, do I need a discussion on if I can cut a Dramamine pill in half? It's like there's no selection anymore editing by Google when you might need a block. If I'm discussing sports like they do in Barry's example here in SC Roundtable, sure, maybe I want to see a discussion. I don't need a discussion on can I cut a Dramamine in half? I need to know an actual authoritative result from someone who knows if you're allowed to do that because it can change the medication. If you do that and you're not allowed to do it, it can be harmful if you do it and you're not allowed to do it. So anyways, I got discussions on multiple searches where it was completely
None
unnecessary
of
and I
which were
needed.
helpful to you.
No, none of which were helpful to anybody. Nobody needs a
Out of
discussion on that.
curiosity, did you go ask Reddit?
No, not for that. But I'm just
Okay.
saying, like, even the Reddit results would have been better than this. This is just the blurbs of people
Because you,
talking.
I read over at Reddit that if you do mistakenly cut a pill in half, you can glue them back together again. It's
But
true.
with Elmer's, because it's non-toxic.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Remember, we were talking about that treasure trove of Googlicious information that was being pulled out of the DOJ cases, the two antitrust cases that are working their way through the find out stage.
Yes.
Part of the evidence suggested, and we don't know when this was written, there's not a lot of context around this, but it's a really interesting. I mean, this is obviously happening, probably happening, and it's also just an interesting thought experiment, I guess, for SEOs. Google is rethinking its search stack from the ground up with LLMs. Again, this could have been evidence from drawn from an email written in 2018. It could have been something that was said in 2023. I don't know. Christine,
Yeah,
have you
again.
seen anything that suggests what this means exactly?
No, it was a testimony from Google, the Panda algorithm, Nayak. But I thought he left Google at some time, so it would be during his time at Google. I believe he didn't he leave a couple years ago?
I remember the name Nyack, and yes,
Yeah,
I
and
think he left
the
the
Panda
company.
algorithm. Yeah, the Panda algorithm
The
was
Panda
named after
algorithm was
him.
like 5 years ago.
No, a long time ago. That was like
Longer
2010.
than that? Really?
Oh
Probably.
yeah. It's because every year now feels like 10.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so they say that it's very brief. They just say that they are thinking about how fundamental concepts of search, ranking, retrieval, display, and SERPs can be reimagined, given the availability of LLMs. We do know that search started to have a quite a serious decline about 2 years ago. So that, and they keep adding more and more large language models for map, large language models for discussions, large language models for, but I haven't noticed any that improved my search result. So we'll see how it
You
goes.
remember the olden days? We just threw links at it. Just
Yeah,
throw another
well,
LLM at it. Screw it. We'll get this fixed
exactly.
eventually.
Pretty much. I miss featured snippets. And that's big to say because I wasn't a big believer in featured snippets, but I miss featured snippets. At least they're accurate and sent me to a website. So anyway, so they said they're rethinking, but as we know, this is probably a little bit older because I do believe I have to check and didn't get a chance this morning that if Panda had left Google.
This might seem like a silly and a really absurd question for an SEO to ask, okay? But I'm going to
Yeah.
ask it anyway. Do you actually care where your client's page ranks? Do you care the position it's in? Do you track the positions? Do you have a spreadsheet saying it was in position one, position five,
So,
position?
do I care? Yeah, I care based on the kind of visibility they get, but can you really track that anymore? Not without paying for a tool set that's doing all the normalization of data.
Okay.
Yeah.
And even if you did, Google just came and threw a big bucket of ice spammers
Yes.
into the
Yes.
mix. Like big bucket of ice water, but the ice water is like wrenches. So every AI overview link that doesn't self-refer back to Google, of course. Every AI overview link that may refer back to your page is going to be a number one link. If you get three links in the, if you're lucky enough to have three links in that AI overview, that is going to go back to your page.
So interesting though, impressions are counted differently. So that might be why. Yeah. So position AI overview occupies a single position. Search results system, Google Search Console help docs. Clicking a link to an external page in AI overview counts as a click. And then standard impression rules apply to be counted as an impression. The link must be scrolled or expanded into view. So that could get all messy, give you some messy data. I'd be
So,
explaining some of what people are seeing with impressions and clicks, because they're seeing it in the AI overview as they expand it with the little tiny link on the right-hand side that most people won't even know to click. You're gonna get an impression, but how many times are you gonna get a click? So that might answer the big
what
question
about
people
that read
had.
more button? There's a little read more tab at
Yeah,
the
a little read
bottom.
more.
If you
That'd be
click on that,
something.
will that get me an impression?
It
If I
could.
expand the AI overview and I'm obviously interested, does that
It's
count?
not counts as an impression, sure, because it's expanded into view. But the
Okay,
thing
but
is, a
you're.
lot of people have been saying they have lots of impressions but low clicks, and I can't figure out where it's coming from. Guess what? This is probably where it's coming from
That's
because
where it's coming from for
people are
sure.
reading the AI overview and all the little links in there that nobody even knows to click on, because not the underlined words; those go back to Google, and then they get very few clicks. I think we just resolved the impressions click right here on the show right now issue.
Well, it's, you know what? This is a clue to. Where all of your actual clicks have gone, were I'm 99.999% sure I absolutely agree with Christine on this. Like I don't think we've solved, but I think this is a huge where a number of the
Oh, yeah.
of your clicks have gone to. I think Google and Discovery is kind of weird. Google and News is kind of weird. A huge amount of clicks may have come from those areas as well. Google's depreciation of AMP. Has changed the way it looks at discovery and traffic publishers might be getting from that. I mean, there's so many things, right? But
Right. But if you
impressions
have
are up,
hot,
clicks
yeah.
are down.
If you have lots of impressions, not like a news site, because a news site, like I could get 1 million impressions and 50 clicks, and that's because it was half of the half image in the carousel or something. But it's sort of the same idea. If anything they read in AI overviews when they if, and when they expand it will register as an impression on your site if your link is there. But because most people don't click those links, one, most people probably don't even know that they exist because they're just a little paperclip on the right side. And you're not getting any click from that. That would be why you have so many impressions and so few clicks. So I would check for AI overviews. There are some good tools out there that monitor that, like Mark Traffigan's SEO Clarity. They monitor AI overviews. And I'm even telling clients to now start signing up for tools that monitor if there's an AI overview involved. Because I bet when you start matching your impressions and clicks to those pages, there's probably an AI overview involved. But there's like 10 times the clicks with the impressions, and that's a regular finding that's happening all the time.
Now, your information may be culled and mixed into an AI overview, into the composition of an AI overview, but approximately 43% of those of links contained in the AI answers are going to go back to Google search results and not back to the website or websites that the information used to compose the overview text were culled from. This is done by a study by SE Ranking. They looked at AI overviews in 5 US states, found again 43% of those answers contain links that redirected users back into Google search, as opposed to the people who composed the actual text.
Also, interestingly enough, the longer search queries and low volume clicks are triggering AI overviews more than you would think. It'd be the other way around logically, but it's not, according to the study. And then, of AI overview responses containing links to Google organic results, 56% do not, but as you said, 43% do in the study that was done. So it's
You
a
know,
very
funny.
walled garden. Yeah.
When I'm trying to generate an AI overview, I tend to write a longer search query. I'm asking a question, and I get quite detailed because if you're going to do the thinking for me, here's what I want you to think about.
Oh, you know what? I don't know this. I have to test it. But I wonder if they're treating your, for the AI overview, if they're treating your search as a prompt.
I certainly hope they are. I mean, I've been assuming they are.
Well, no, I would
Honestly, I've been
assume.
assuming that there has to be some aspect of that in there.
But if it's a longer view, the longer the query triggers more AI overviews, that would point more less to search information as being pulled, like it's being treated like a search result and more like a
And
AI
I
prompt
think the way
result.
people are using this environment is slowly shifting as they're getting more
Yeah.
used to using tools like ChatGPT or one of my new faves. I love Guiding Perplexity. And I use serious prompt action to get results out of Perplexity. Are they correct? Well, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I'm actually doing a lot of Perplexity searches and then truing them against Google searches just as my own experiment. And yeah, I mean, mess around with using prompts and AI search,
I didn't.
it marginally affects the, how to say it? I keep using the word contextualization in the show, but if you're using AI, you really, 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 really got to tell the AI exactly what you're talking about, and even then, you got to triple check it.
Well, I will say that it'd be worth, because that's a little different than at generative AI in a search engine, but I wonder if you type your query more like a prompt. If it's going to trigger more AI overviews, longer queries would do that. Some other
Well,
stats
just
real quick from this study. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
yeah.
Again. Just we're going to run close to time here. 99% all appear with other things, almost always with a people also ask box. The typical AI overview has about 1,766 characters, 254 words, cites an average of 13 sources. Medium to difficult keywords most frequently trigger AI overviews. Interesting. Highly competitive rarely generate them, which is 3.7%. So that's an interesting thing. Keywords with CPC values between $2 and $5 produce the highest rate of AI overviews, while expensive keywords does not.
I
Plus
wonder
$10.
why. Come
Wonder
on.
why? So they're gaming after just being found in a legal monopoly.
You
Might have to get rid of Chrome. They're
know,
gaming AI.
that last one you note is my favorite stat of them all.
Yes.
The higher the keyword bid, the less likely the generative the AI overview so they can get the click. My goodness.
Fashion and beauty. I just thought of some black hat techniques that could be tested too out of that. Fashion and beauty has the lowest AI overview appearance, followed by e-commerce and news and politics. So 1.4% for fashion and beauty, 2.1% for e-commerce, and 3.8% for news and politics. So if you're in those areas and you're seeing downturns, right now there's this very common thing to say that everything's Google taking your search, you probably have something else going on. The longer an AI overview answers, the more sources it cites. Responses under 600 characters cite about 5. Those over 6,600 characters cite about 28. So those are the stats for the study. Those are very interesting. I think I want to test some of that.
Moving along, there was a leak of Google internal emails from Google Mark from stemming from the Google Marketing Live conference in 2024. Apparently, Performance Max, or PMax to its friends, is, you know, its rapper name is PMax, is totally underwhelming its users, Google advertisers and marketers, at least according to the people tasked with selling it to them. PMax's full automation of that of the advertising sphere has turned off marketers, and many of them are actually refusing to use it.
Yeah, it's I don't have a I don't understand PMax a lot to make a lot of commentary about it, but there is a lot of there's a real email in here that people might want to read who are dealing with that situation.
Well, it's do you remember how marketers, digital marketers were accusing Google of trying to steal their clients, Google reps of like client snatching. This is the ultimate client snatching because it's not even a Google rep doing it. It's an automated system doing it.
Yeah,
and that's
I know
what this
they've
is all about.
Yeah, I know they've been having a lot of problems with it. I know people have been complaining quite a bit and that Google's costing them more money with all their AI stuff.
What do you, well, okay, so this, I don't mean to throw out conspiratorial thinking, but as demonstrated by that beautiful stat in our last story that you put out, what do you think Google's going to do? It's going to do the thing that, yes, is good for its advertisers. It does want to treat its customers well. But at the same time, it wants to make the maximum amount of money it can per click. That's the only way Google stays alive.
Yes, it does. But
so, yeah, there will be a balancing act, hopefully balanced in the favor of the advertisers, but you know, Google knows. So, John Mueller had to explain yet again that just because you use a certain tag or a certain technique doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be indexed. Although this is kind of a weird one. The href language, href lang tag does not guarantee indexing. Although the href lang tag doesn't actually get fired or recognized until a page is indexed. But it doesn't guarantee you're going to that page in particular will stay in the index and keep its positioning. Because there could be a page that's very similar. For instance, French French and Belgian French. Similar, incredibly similar languages, Quebecois and Parisian French, incredibly similar languages. The French French page may well be the dominant page of the Belgian and Quebecois pages. Why should they, Google's thinking is, why should they rank or be even indexed when we have this page that totally says the same thing and totally suits the need?
Sure.
That's what I think
Although
is thinking.
The weird thing about the not doesn't guarantee indexing is it wouldn't read the page unless it was, I mean, I guess it could just crawl it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it usually doesn't read the page unless it's indexed. So it wouldn't see the code unless maybe in the crawling process, they're checking something, but I
remember
would, that
Google's
would be
dual
weird.
Crawl process. It hits the page, looks at the instant HTML data, basically the metadata and any text it can pull off the page quickly. And then it comes back to really unpack the page and see what's in there. So
maybe
the first pass, it will absolutely see the href language tag. Unless you've
just
got something screwing
it?
Up your head.
Just uncrawl?
On its first, well, yeah, it's reading all the metadata.
Okay. I did not see that, so I will trust you on that.
And on this, and so now it knows it's got three pages that say essentially the same, X number of pages that say essentially the same thing, but they're all for different versions of the same language. American English, Canadian English, British English, Scottish English, and Irish English are very different languages.
Yes.
But they're all
yes.
covered by EN.
Yes, but I did date two British men, and we definitely talked different languages at times.
Absolutely. So. I said I was in a meeting with an American corporation earlier today and said Zed. And I honestly heard a quick silence on the line, and then people start talking again. Oh, he
I
just
have to
outed himself.
translate. I have to translate. Now, also, if you ever want to know if someone's Canadian, just ask them to say this word, Y-A-H-O-O. Go ahead, Jim.
Yahoo. Yahoo! You have to have the exclamation mark at the end. That's how you know it's an SEO.
You guys say Yahoo. We say Yahoo.
That's how you know it's a Canadian SEO. We're actually excited
exactly.
about it.
There you go.
Unless it's Canadian SEO who lost a significant amount of money on their goddamn stock. Yahoo.
Yahoo. And Google is testing new recipe search feature, which is also, you know what it's powered by? I'll give you one guess.
Oh, I'm sure it's powered by AI overviews. I remember they were talking about this a couple of years ago, though, and all the recipe site people got so pissed off. Google actually made a specific tool in Google Labs where you could eliminate all the crap, all the narrative crap from the recipe, and just get the recipe.
Oh yeah.
That's what I think this is. Now it's in the real world. Coming into the real world, and I just remember how much it pissed off the recipe site owners. In a weird way, I almost delighted in that, because that just got really it had just gotten sick. We destroyed that part of the industry.
Yeah, well, we didn't. Yeah, remember Google told them recipe sites just had recipes weren't going to be indexed well. So then everyone said, "Well, I guess we got to create content. What content are we going to create? We'll tell the story about our recipe." And now Google hates that. But I don't know if it's in the regular AI overviews, because it is got a Search Labs marker on various page, but I don't like it. I don't think it's better than what they currently do to display recipes. It's just a long stream of pictures with a name of a recipe, as opposed to, you know, the carousel packs or the 4 or 6 packs where they show you like them all together. So I don't know. I think Google needs to learn how to design a page and not just throw everything on it, but that's just me. What do you think, Jim?
I absolutely agree. However, Google is going to do what is fastest and best for Google. It honestly wants to give its users the hyperbaked, super fast answer. And it would prefer to refer you back to a Google result page than to refer you to somebody else who might get the ad click. So, they're just going to compose pages on the fly. They're just going to make it up, and it's going to be cheap crap.
It's called Tanagram, and they said a year ago, I think it was, that they're going to start using AI to organize the pages.
Yeah.
But they've lost share 2 quarters in a row. They've made more money because they've hidden links, and people wind up on another Google search and eventually just click on an ad, or they don't know that's an ad. But they're losing share, and they're losing it to Bing, not AI search.
When
we
you
covered that
have,
last week.
Yeah, again, but they're like, we're talking the difference between 90.1 and 89.9. And when you're Google, you're like, oh, well, I just lost 0.04% of search, or 0.03% of search. Uh-oh. I still control 89.9% of the information flowing around the world. The truth is, I don't think they care.
I think you're probably right until the stockholders care, because they're making money. They don't, but it is 2 quarters decline. They've not had that, I think, happen in many, many years or ever. So we'll see if the third quarter is off.
Google's
too.
In a recession.
Yeah, basically, and it's their own fault.
Well,
I will say, Google, if you're listening, please hire someone to design pages. Please, throwing everything on a page is not a good user experience.
Speaking of, Google wants webmasters to understand how to build pages and give it a good Google experience. And actually, in this case, they're absolutely right. So you got the same URL, the same image. It's your, I don't know, your logo or something that is just doesn't change page to page to page, but you put it up using different URLs based on the page it's on. You don't got to do that. That stops Google from being able to cache the image efficiently and then serve it in relation to the page, or understand this in relation to your page. You're basically screwing Google and forcing it to download the same asset over and over and over again, but it has slightly different names. And you're screwing yourself, because that asset could rank in Google image search, except you've just created 10 or 20 or X number of that asset, and none of them on their own are gonna, if they're all, you got the benefit of there being 100 of the same asset, under the same name, it's the same file, 100
Also,
instances of the one file, you might get the ranking.
yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And the thing is also an image search. You don't want to like dilute the links that come to the image or the page with the image on it, that kind of thing. So,
Yeah,
exactly.
so
Yeah, they're right.
stop doing that. There's no reason. I don't even understand why somebody would do that. I
I don't
had to read the
understand
story
how.
twice to figure out why someone would do it.
The only thing I can imagine is happening is in WordPress, every time you upload something, it gets its own little page and its own URL. And then maybe people are duplicating images in their WordPress media file or media library. And so when they go in there, one person selects one person selects the other. They're basically the same. They wind up with the multiple images. Actually, they are the same, but they're the same. They don't realize they're the same. So that's the only thing I could think of. I don't know any instance you would code in different URL. Sort of an image file, it's in your database. You're not going to make up new URLs for that item, but in WordPress,
Why
you can do
would
it.
you? That's I could that's the only time maybe for handwritten HTML sites.
No. I coded
Somebody
HTML for
using an old
14 years.
HTML editor
No,
like Front Page or something.
no.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. Like why?
Content management systems. So. They assign different URLs if it's uploaded more than once. So they don't recognize that they're the same thing. Yeah.
Guess what? We've gone through all the major stories. Now we got the fast ones.
Got the fast ones. Okay. So, and Google search testing a new second submenu. So Google is adding a, like, if you're over whichever one it happens to be, let's say, is it all still? You know, when you look at something every day and you don't
Yeah,
know anymore.
all images.
Yeah.
Are
So
they
they'll
going to have
put
something
like,
underneath that now?
yeah, so under all, it might have about by owner directory events, exhibition, location, menu, photos. I don't know why. Photos, we already have images. And then it might, you select one and it looks like one of those little pills that a lot of the e-commerce sites use. And it says, by owner. And now you've selected a refinement by owner. I don't see that this serves a necessary function, and it's weird. By owner? What does by owner even mean?
So, as of May 2025, Google's going to be adding a new ads funded by details telling the payment profile name for the payer of verified advertisers, if the especially if that name differs from the verified advertiser name. What do you think about that?
I don't really understand it. It sounds like it's just duplicating information. Like, why would they be different?
Well, yeah, what if I buy ads for my client and it's bought on my company credit card,
Oh,
but
that's
it's
true,
not for
yeah.
me, does that mean that they have to say bought by Digital Always Media, even though it's say the XYZ dog food company?
I'm guessing maybe. It's not really clear, but I think that would be one of the only instances where you'd have two different names, correct?
Indeed, I don't understand it myself, but there you go. Google's going to be
Okay.
adding a feature, ads funded by, as a
On
detail as
in
part
May
of,
this
May
month.
2025,
Yes.
which happens to be halfway through this month.
You believe we're almost halfway through the year? Oh my gosh.
I know, eh? Isn't
So
that amazing?
yeah. So Google Search Console teams testing ad annotation to performance reports, which sounds like a nice thing to have. So
Great.
yeah, so you can
Beautiful.
annotate your regular, now you can also annotate your performance reports. Anything to add
In
to that? The positive?
GA3 or UA3
No.
annotations, I don't know how many times saved my butt.
Yeah, that's really
If you want,
helpful too. When I audit a site, I'm sorry, I did not mean to interrupt, but
well,
when I
you've
audit
still
a
got those
site, it's
memories.
yeah, like right now I'm looking at a site that has a CTR rate in GSC that went from 14% to 7% and overnight, and there's no obvious reason for it. And traffic didn't drop, it wasn't a traffic drop, it was just a CTR drop. So it's very strange. Okay, Google Business Profiles, what's happening feature? Reminds me of the old show, What's Happening? What's happening now? So what's happening, future? Because we're just going to stick everything in the world in a business profile. I don't think this is a bad idea. It's just, you know, how much can you put in that tiny little space in the search result? But
Well,
Derek, go ahead.
if you have a broken down Lada and it struggles to make it down the highway and it's always dropping pieces here and there and you're constantly repairing the damn thing, why do you bolt more stuff onto it?
Exactly. The other thing too, though, is it does keep you on. Where do you think you go when you click this? To the
Google results, I
website?
would think.
Google? Yes, more Google. Not results, but more Google. So basically, the appearance is there's a feature space to the right lower side that says, like, this week we have live music. And then it takes you to a larger version of that. And then you click on that and you get an even bigger version of that, all in Google, not your website. So if you have details that are not going to be available in Google Business that are important, do not use this feature because you will not be going to your site to get the information. But they say, we're excited to announce a new way for restaurants and bars to highlight events, deals, and specials prominently at the top of your business profile. It's not actually at the top, but anyway. What's happening puts your timely updates like today's special or live music on Saturday front and center, driving immediate engagement. To be eligible to appear for this new space, share what's happening at your business via Google posts or connect your Facebook, Instagram, or X profiles for your GBP automatic syncing. So basically, they're automatically syncing from those sources. I mean, if you have like daily specials, it's definitely not a bad idea. But if you are doing something that's important that they go to your website to read the page, this will not take them there. There will be a link to it, but it won't take them there.
Nevertheless, I think this is a really cool thing.
Yeah,
So
it's definitely be helpful.
Say you've got your venue that has bands playing. This is a really quick way that your patrons can see who's playing that week. You got the hockey game on. You got the World Series is coming up. So you got the world. You got the, you know what I mean? Like all of these things can be a feature that can be a draw that can bring people in instantly. And the more information you provide Google, the more information they can provide people about your business. I think
This
this
is
is
all
a
very
great way
true.
to provide that information.
I just wish they'd find a way to edit this so they're not cramming everything into this tiny space. But you're right.
Yeah.
So oh, here's the most, I don't know. We know that Google once was 6 months deciding on a color blue for a button, right?
Yep.
Not different colors, just what shade of blue. I have a feeling that's what happened with the Super G logo now in the Apple app. Apparently, I didn't change it everywhere, which is also a bit odd, because usually when you change your branding, you change it everywhere. But they created a new logo, and basically, as someone put, and I don't remember the person's name on social, I think Twitter, that said, this is the most expensive Gaussian blur in history. So basically, they take the hard lines of the Google logo and they blurred them. So there you go.
Is
I don't
that
think that.
kind of symbol? Is that foreshadowing? Like we talked about last week, how Google is going to be usurped in the iOS world by whatever Apple is making, this AI search feature that Apple's introducing. So is this Gaussian blurring of the sharp and focused Google symbol a little bit of foreshadowing from the
Maybe.
iOS folks?
And maybe not even intentionally. So it's just an interesting thing they spend a lot of money on because it's just blurring the colors. So at the hard demarcation line. Next, we're moving along. Oh, sorry.
No, don't tell me. Google's
What?
replacing the I'm feeling lucky button with an AI mode button?
Yeah, so you know what this tells me?
That they're
They're
not cool
putting
anymore?
no, that AI
Oh.
mode is not getting the uptick they thought it would get because now it's everywhere. It was just in like one place and now they're putting AI mode everywhere. And that tells me people are not using it like they thought they would.
I never click the I'm feeling lucky button because that really just brings up the number one result. I don't, you know, like that's not a.
But sometimes
But
it's
I've always
fun.
liked that it was there. It was
Yes,
dumb. It
yes.
was fun. It was cute. It
Yes.
was Google being precocious.
And, you know, it may seem like a little thing, right? But you have that feeling about Google because they had this funny, cute little precocious button that said, I'm feeling lucky. Now they're like, AI mode. And we'll put AI mode everywhere until people learn that they have to use AI mode. So,
I remember at
that's
one of
why
the Google dances, they were giving out I'm feeling lucky t-shirts. Everybody wanted one for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's just people aren't upticking it because they've put it in, remember, banner promotions for AI mode, and then now AI mode in the actual search toolbar, and AI mode now and here, and AI, you know, they're putting it everywhere, which means people are not using it. is
I'm
my
feeling
feeling.
stuck.
I could be, we'll see. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Yeah, it is kind of. I'm looking at that homepage image, and it's kind of bleh now because it was like, I'm feeling lucky. It just feels good. I'm feeling lucky, and now it's like, that's branding. That's marketing. Now it's like AI mode.
Yeah,
Brr.
no, let's
Yeah.
be serious about it. Put your tie on and click the damn button.
Exactly. It's pretty much what it feels like. Okay. Next is there is a. Did we come to the? Oh, we came to the end. This is our final story. But I thought this is a good story of the week. Google has a solution for your unpaid poll text. Now, this is for your phone. Obviously, you don't use a Google phone. It's not going to probably help you. But I got this. I went to California 3 weeks ago. And I actually got to sit on a Chris Titus taping with somebody who was being interviewed. And I came back and it said, you have unpaid tolls. And they have tolls in California, they don't have tolls where I live. And I was like, oh crap. Oh, sorry, I used the wrong word. I was like, whoa, did I hit a toll I didn't know about? Well, it's a rental car. I'm just going to let it go anyway because it's not, no one's going to pay for it. But then I re-looked at it like, oh, this is a scam, but it looks really official. And they threaten you, right? Like all scams do. And so Google is now a solution for the unpaid toll text stamps. It's not perfect, but it helps. And it says the next time you're tempted to, this is an article from CNN, the next time you're tempted to tap a text message to resolve an unpaid toll balance, your Android phone may warn you to think twice. So Google's updating its scam text detection technology, say that three times fast, to spot hoaxes like this. Most common ones are, ones that are already listed with the Federal Trade Commission for however long we have that. The new scam detection will come as an update to Google Messages, the messaging app installed on most Google phones, using something else that might not work for that messaging app. And it'll start rolling out this week, Tuesday this week. And just one of several Android updates Google announced at the developer conference and will, next week that they will be announcing. So the complaint center roughly received 60,000 complaints from these toll scams last year. So it's pretty prevalent because you have to imagine for every 60,000 people, there's probably 10 for each person that doesn't make a
Just
complaint.
yeah.
Yeah,
So
I
let me
didn't
get
make a
this straight.
complaint.
You drove from a non-toll state into a state that has road tolls, and somebody detected that your phone was there, and so they're gonna start
Possibly.
sending you messages. Well, why else would you get them at that exact
Well,
time?
a whole bunch of people got them in the last 2 weeks, so it's possible they just got a list of, phone numbers.
Okay.
But it is possible, you're right, it is possible. There could be a, something that's
Well, if
infected on my.
Google has the data. Google has the platform, the Android platform that runs on what about half the just under half the data devices in the world, the mobile data devices in the world. So it's not like they don't have the information to assess out what is and isn't a scam, yeah.
Right, they use anti-spam tech on other things too. It's not just this. This is just the newest edition, and they analyze the conversation for red flags like phishing scams, poor grammar, urgent language, suspicious links, and imitations of official logos. And this was from AAA reported on that. And
Well,
then
good for them.
they're adopting some more sophisticated techniques where they may hide or rotate URLs to make them harder to detect. They also may borrow language from legitimate sources. So you want to be careful always before you click on something like this. But the good thing is your phone will be better at telling you if it is a fraud.
Well, there you go. Good for them.
Yeah.
This is like, nah. You know what? I'm sure they'll be casting a very, very, very wide net, but it'll improve in efficiency as those things go along. Again, good
As it
on them. I'm
was,
glad they're
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah, very
That's
much.
it. We got all the
That's
way
it.
through. Another
Yay.
action-packed week.
Yeah, very busy week. And next
Okay, and
week's
actually,
I/O, so it might be a
yeah,
good
and
week
Google
to
I/O
get
is
through
coming up
here.
next week, so it'll be even more busy and action-packed. Christine,
Yeah.
I understand you got a hard stop, and we've actually gone over time here, so we do got to get out of here. Friends, you have been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on the 15th of May, 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, have an excellent week. Stay well, be patient with each other, rank well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.